Well, aloha, says Kona Reeves, and us from PWT Talks NXT. I am your host, Kelly Wells. I write the NXT tracker on Pro Wrestling Torch. I took this last week off. I was going to write up a little bit more on the guys who came up, who were signed to the main roster, but I didn't do it this last week because I had a tragedy in real life, so we'll move on from that. But yeah, we'll hit you with that soon, and I'll talk a little bit more about the guys that called up. So first of all, let me go ahead and introduce my other guys before I tell you how you can get a hold of us and ask us questions. All right, this week I've got Harley Padgett with me.
Hello, that's my name. I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I write about television, live events, host a podcast, which is now part of the PW Torch livecast family every Tuesday. That's called Talking Honor. And this coming Tuesday, I am officially happy to announce that I'll be revealing my new permanent on-air co-host. So tune in for that.
Wowie wow. All right. And we're going to go ahead and introduce Justin James as well.
And I am Justin James. I am Justin_M_James on Twitter. And I am the NXT TV correspondent for The Torch.
All right, perfect. So we've got a ton to cover. And if you want to ask us any questions on the show, we get a lot of questions during the show. Usually, today we got one, which is great because during the week we got zero. This is going to be our lightest output for questions in quite some time. But we got one. If you want to get a hold of us, that is pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. That is how to get a hold of us, and you can email us with any questions, thoughts, whatever you got. If you say it, we'll field it, and we'll talk about it if it's in time for the show. So there you go. We got a lot to cover. We had five matches on the show. Harley, do you know how often that there are five matches on the show? I know you keep stats. Has it been a while since there were five? Do you have any idea?
I don't keep stats on that kind of thing, but I know totally with you. I thought Candice and Bianca's not going to happen because we only ever get four matches.
Right.
That's just going to be an angle. It's not going to happen.
And four isn't even something that is necessarily every time. We certainly get weeks of three. But yeah, we got five matches and a very large number of promos. So let's get to the first one. And by the first one, I mean the last one. Roderick Strong versus Pete Dunne, a non-title match. A bit of, you know, this one's just setting things in motion. But in the meantime, they gave us a match working at about 60%, I'd say, holding a lot back for what will be a strong blow-off match for them, I assume. So Pete Dunne versus Roderick Strong in the main event. Justin, go ahead and take this one.
I really like the way this match was done. I think that Pete Dunne just showed great fire and just really emphasized, you know, just how angry he is. Percy Watson interjected this one little piece that I thought was a good sentence where he says, you know, Pete Dunne never trusts anybody and he trusted Roderick Strong. And I think that was a really good offset to what Strong said in his promo when he talked about, you know, Dunne would have betrayed him and Undisputed Era has stuck together. You know, I thought that was really good because, you know, it fit right in with Dunn's character. So I thought Watson did a really good job, you know, continuing to talk up this feud. The end was unfortunately expected and predictable. It was just the question for me was, is this going to end up being a steel cage match at a takeover or a 6-to-8-man tag match down the road? And it looks like we're going the tag match route.
Yeah, I got a feeling that this tag match will be sooner than later. I don't know if they'll... I mean, I guess it's only about a month and a half until the next NXT takeover. They didn't mention that on the show. Last week, I know I was saying I didn't think they were doing one again in June this year. I was wrong. That was pointed out to me after the show went off. There is indeed one in, I want to say, Chicago, the night before Money in the Bank, just like there has been once or twice in the past. So not that long. So still some time to get some things in motion, but I don't know. I guess it could be just Strong versus Dunne at that show. There's a lot of different ways it can go, and that's a very exciting thing. And we finally have Oney and Danny Burch in a storyline, and that's a cool thing. This is going to be a really, really stiff feud, and I love a good stiff feud. Harley, what did you think?
Yeah, early thoughts for my thoughts this morning before this episode for Chicago was a six-man match with Undisputed Era against Dunn and Mustache Mountain. We kind of thought we might be going that way for a while now with British Strong Style.
Yeah.
So very surprised that it was Lorcan and Birch who made the save here. I'm guessing that's just a TV match that we're going to get. We'll get Lorcan and Birch maybe challenging for the TV title or for the tag titles or getting a non-title tag match in a couple of weeks. That's my best guess. I can't see them being involved in the big takeover conclusion to this feud.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine them being on takeover at all at this point. But yeah, anything's possible.
Yeah, this match, I mean, good. Definitely made me think I want to see these two in a proper TV main event. You know, everybody banned from ringside, give them half the show, just like 20 minutes to go out there full throttle for the title and show what they can do. Because God knows we've seen with Don enough times what magic he can do when he's in a long form match, whether it's with Bate or somebody else.
Yeah. I think he does a really great job of holding back on TV and leave you wanting more. That's not just him. That's also the booking, which has really, really been aces in NXT for some time. Even when their storytelling was kind of half-assed for a year or two, the in-ring product was not suffering and the finishes were not suffering. Some real cool stuff going on there, but I might have cut you off there. What else did you have there?
No, only other thing I was going to say was because this was non-title, I figured the DQ finish, no contest or something, is the obvious out. I thought maybe because it's non-title, there's a chance we'd instead get Roddy stealing a victory.
Right.
You know, Kyle distracts the ref, Cole hits a super kick, Roddy gets the pin. And the only reason I would have been more intrigued by that is Pete Dunne's undefeated in NXT. He currently has the best record out of anyone in NXT. After tonight, he's 9-0. So if that had happened, it would have been very interesting for me, at least, to see, you know, oh, his undefeated streak is over and he's taken his first loss, even if it is at the hands of three men.
Yeah, they don't make a big deal about his undefeated streak because he lost in the original tournament and he lost a takeover. Yeah, it was a takeover rematch with Tyler Bate. So, it didn't even occur to me, really.
Was it a takeover match with Bate?
I thought it was takeover.
We're gonna have to look that up, because according to my records, he's never lost a match in NXT.
Okay. I thought it was takeover.
Pretty sure his only loss was to Tyler Bate in the UK Championship final.
Didn't he lose one rematch? Maybe not.
No.
Okay. Well, there you have it, folks. But yeah, at any rate, they still don't make a big deal about that undefeated streak, and it isn't something they're using as a crutch, which is always unfortunate when I think somebody's doing an undefeated thing and then you have to keep them away from so many different wrestlers so you don't ruin their momentum.
Well, I mean, you're a regular NXT viewer and you weren't sure. You thought maybe he had lost in NXT. So there you go.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you guys both told me that I was wrong. And in my head, I'm still like, oh, I don't know. yeah. So, yeah, I obviously must be. But yeah, that didn't occur to me. Oh, by the way, I was going to say at the outset of the show, I am bringing back, at least for this week, because we're going to be light on questions, I've got a trivia question for you guys later in the show. So watch for that. I looked up a takeover-based trivia question. I think it's
fun.
And maybe we'll start doing those a little more regularly. But anyway,
we haven't had a trivia question in some time.
Yeah, we haven't. I want to say it was during the first four or five episodes that probably was our last one. But Harley's dropped a couple of things on us, I suppose. But yeah, we're going to do a little one later today. So that was Dunn and Strong. A lot going on, a lot of moving parts here. Oni and Birch getting involved. And I can't say I'm disappointed. Definitely it's more obvious to use Mustache Mountain, but man, it's nice to see Lorcan and Birch have something. Like, to be in the main event segment just is something you would not have expected for them. So it's great. And this is going to be stiff, and oh man, it's just going to be awesome. Okay, so Next order of business is Street Profits versus TM61. I do have a little bit of an email about this. Our one email this week is from a guy named Chris Fielder. Hasn't emailed us before, but here he is. Hey guys, I listen every week and love the show. So is this a heel turn for TM61? I thought they teased splitting them up at one time, but I can't remember for sure. What do you guys think about this? And one more question. War Raiders. That name really sucks. Your opinion? Chris, I agree. That name really sucks. Tom and I talked about it right after it was announced. We were talking about it online, and Tom pointed out the same thing. Tom and I are both very pedantic and snooty people, and that probably comes across on the show. But he mentioned that he really hated the R from War bumping up against the R in Raiders, and I feel exactly the same way. But even taking away that aesthetic problem, I really think War Raiders is less cool than War Machine. Now, they can't use it for whatever reason. They can't use it. They either didn't want to have two machines, or they didn't want to have want to invite any trouble from the Marvel Cinematic Universe or whatever we got going on. Marvel is Disney now, so we know they're litigious. So maybe so that's the kind of thing that they might have protected. So yes, Chris, that name does suck. TM61, yes, I do think that this was a heel turn. I think they've teased that a little bit, and this is probably the beginning of what's going to be a heel turn for them. I think it's proper that this match was short as a result, because Street Profits were not expecting that these guys were going to cheat them. But I thought that this would happen relatively soon, even as soon as this week. And I think that these guys are going to work heel for a while. It seemed odd the way they brought them back if they were just going to do a heel turn right away. But whatever. I think it'll work for them. But I hate to take every piece of ammo you guys have. Harley, go ahead.
Yeah, when TM61 lost first match of the Dusty Rose Classic, I think I thrown out even on the show, maybe they turn heel. Also at the time, it seemed like there was a big surplus of babyface tag teams, not too many heel tag teams. So just for the sake of balancing, a fresh coat of paint on TM61 after coming back from injury. And they hadn't really been clicking with the fans as much as you might expect, even before injury. There was something a little, maybe something missing personality-wise. So all of that makes sense. I like that this was a different way to do a heel turn. So many heel turns, especially in wrestling these days, start with just, a blind attack from behind or a cheap shot, something like that. This was a lot more subtle in that they used the ropes, but I could conceive them coming out next week and giving another babyface promo and acting like it didn't happen,
right,
or something to that effect.
And storyline backs this happening too, because TM61 were frustrated with the fact that they couldn't get back in the win column, so doing whatever they had to do. Now, I will say that despite the fact that I am liking Percy more and more all the time, I don't like it when face announcers say, but hey, it's all about winning and whatever you can do. I can't stand it. Just be a baby face.
Well, if you're going to be Percy's a face, defense, be a face. In Percy's defense, he did say he didn't like it. He said, I don't like it, but I understand it.
Yeah, I guess.
I hate to bring this man's name up, but compared to Shucky Ducky Quack Quack.
Booker, you never know exactly, is he working heel, is he working face, or is he just
working Booker?
Yeah, is he working us or himself? I have no idea with Booker, and I love him for it, like, don't get
Booker's
me wrong.
Booker's the only man who swerves himself.
I don't need Booker 2-3 hours a week, but for a pre-show on the pay-per-views, absolutely. Like, I love his presence for that, because he's just Looney Tunes, and it's great. I also loved the way that they pulled off this this heel turn, just because storyline absolutely necessitated drastic measures for these guys. So absolutely organic, and I liked what they did, and I hope that this leads to a long and fruitful feud with these guys.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn, go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Justin, on this match.
Yeah, I definitely agree 100%. I like the way it's been building up. You know, these guys were frustrated that they can't get a win. You know, it wasn't like this overt, nasty heel thing. It was just like, hey, we're just trying to win here. You know, we need a win. We're trying to win. And I like that. You know, I like the way – and you're right. They could still give some babyface promos while continuing to behave like this until they eventually go full on heel. I think it's very well done.
Okay.
I was just trying to gather my thoughts about the War Raiders thing. I hate that name too. It sounds so lame, weak. It's like the War Raiders. Would you write War Raiders? Like the War Recon team? Like.
It's amazing how much more corporate it sounds than War Machine. I don't know why that is, but it does feel
it's like a demotion. It's like you guys were a machine, and now you're just the Raiders. Like, next week, you're going to be like the War Scouts.
The War Recon team. I love it. Oh, my gosh. There was a wrestler named Recon for a while, and I was like, wow,
that
really makes you the low man on the totem pole.
Thank you.
Sniper Recon. And
I used to have this Sergeant Slaughter album, and Recon was the other person. I couldn't remember who it was.
Bull Buchanan was in that group. I don't remember if he was Sniper Recon. I have no idea. But he was one of those guys before.
But yeah, War Raiders just sounds it just sounds weak. Like I don't know.
They should just call them Battle Dudes.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too. Is like, remember we were saying a couple weeks ago, we were talking about Heavy Machinery. Like, you know, 30 years ago they'd be called Scoop and Dozer.
Yeah,
right.
Like War Machine looks like a Legion of Doom knockoff to me. You know, with these face headpieces things that they're wearing, looks like they watched one too many Triple H WrestleMania entrances, but couldn't afford motorcycles or girls to ride on them. So
yeah, I guess I've been watching their matches for so long, I don't think of those comparisons. I wonder now if I ever did, but I've been watching them for long enough that I don't even think about that at this point.
They just have, especially with the name War Raiders, they just have this feel of like the Bushwhackers, right? They just feel like this 80s. WWF era tag team, and it's just not doing it for me. Like I got to see them in the ring, and I'm sure they're awesome in the ring, but that's not the point. Like this gimmick is dragging them down.
It'll be interesting to see how their in-ring work overcomes this, because in the ring they're dynamite. These are a really great overwhelming power tag team. This is the AOP had to go up, because otherwise you would have had the same act twice on a show. And it'll be interesting also to see how they differentiate these guys from AOP, or if they just kind of tell the same story with them. I don't think we even know if the War Raiders are going to work face or heel. But you know what? We can't spend the entire episode talking about the one team on the roster that wasn't actually on the show.
Recon team?
I guess we can. The Recon team. Yeah, we'll come up with all kinds of names that could be better. Maybe that'll be our big thing. Hey, readers, what do you think could be a better name for the War Raiders? If you have ideas, why don't you tell us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, and we will read the best ones and the worst ones. So just have at it. So,
well, there's just one thing that I find kind of interesting about NXT in general.
Okay.
We bring in guys like Samoa Joe and EC3, and they get to keep their singles names that they were using previously before arriving here. Ricochet, same thing.
Kind of with EC3. Like, yeah, I'm saying Ethan, but yeah, I get you.
But yeah. Whereas the Mighty Don't Kneel, Red Dragon, War Machine all got their names changed.
I wonder if it's just a hierarchy, like the Boys Club. If you have a certain amount of equity within the business or a certain amount of years, I don't know. I mean, wrestling is such a weird business backstage, and I wonder how much of that plays into it. And I've always wondered about how much changing names is just seen as a, how does this young wrestler react to us taking away, like stripping their identity and giving them a new one?
Yeah, it's like hazing.
Yeah, right. Like hazing without being illegal about it.
So if the Young Bucks came to NXT, would they be called the Young Dudes?
They were Generation Me in TNA.
I like the Young Dudes. It's kind of like the War Raiders. Right. The Young Dudes.
Yeah, that's about as bland as it gets. That would be not great for them. But I don't know.
Their gimmick is they have to wrestle before 9 p.m. bedtime.
They can't be on the they can't be in the main event because that's when they're winding down and having their glass of warm milk. Oh God, we're getting weird this week, guys. We are so. But what can you do? If you're going to go on tangents, it might as well be on the show that had a million things going on, right? So we got to talk about all of them. Okay, let's cover Candice versus Bianca. Candice LeRae versus Bianca Belair. This seemed like a match where neither one was ready to lose, but sure enough, there is a reason storyline-wise for Candice to take a loss because it... And they brought it up, and I loved that they brought it up because when Bianca won, I said, you know what they got to do is talk about how... This was not mentally the time for Candice, and certainly that's what they did. I love Bianca's entrance so much, to the point where she started doing it at just past Gorilla, you know, at the top of the ramp, and she starts doing her twirl and spinning her hair and stuff like that, and it's very highly choreographed. And then they cut away to a reaction shot from Candice, and I got mad. Like, I was just like, dude, I want to see this entrance, which I think is a good sign of one of many good signs of Bianca. Just love her as a worker. Not to take anything away from Candice, I like her too. But I'm just adoring Bianca at this point. So Bianca versus Candice and the many moving parts in that as far as Candice is concerned. Harley, go ahead.
Yeah, I liked the story. Again, we got Candice's first loss out of the way. But it doesn't hurt her long term. They sold the backstage interview she did beforehand. I thought they did a great job making her really look disheveled, like she hadn't slept in a week. And she was just really, not prepared for this sort of thing. Bianca's now 5-0. She has, I think, the best record in the women's division. What I really noticed about Belair in this match is she just feels so much more fully formed than most of the women in the roster. The way she poses and spins her, her braid around, the way she spins in the little circle and rotates at the same time, her jacket, even her moveset. I don't love her finishing move. I'll say that about Bianca, where she just kind of awkwardly throws her backwards. Not a fan of that. Otherwise, everything about Bianca is great. Candice, yeah. And for Candace, this was a mirror image of Johnny's story after the breakup of DIY, right? He lost a bunch of matches there because his head wasn't in the game. He was just so distracted by what Ciampa did to him and everything. And now she's distracted by what Ciampa did to him.
Yeah, this is just a great piece of storytelling. And it's crazy that this Gargano thing isn't over, but interesting as it continues to evolve and move towards whatever the heck they're going to do with him for the rest of the time that he's down there. And that's
expanding now. So it's not just Gargano or Ciampa anymore. Now she's involved. Now Cassius Ono is involved.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked last week largely about, and I was going to get to this, but where you brought up his name, so why the heck not now? We talked about who might finally get into that feud with Tommaso Ciampa so he doesn't just look like he only exists for because we thought it was problematic if he only existed when Johnny existed, even though that's been a really cool story. And I don't remember if any of us brought up Cassius, but I almost – he's somebody I thought of, so I would have to assume that one of us brought him up for maybe an early feud for him. But yeah, I think that's a good one. I think it'll be hard-hitting. Well, I'm sure it will, and that should be a lot of fun. But before I go too far off the rails, Candace versus Bianca, Justin.
Yeah, I really like this match. I mean, Holly really said everything that, you know, I noticed too from her appearance during the interview where she looked, you know, she looked like she wasn't, you know, dolled up like she usually is. That was a really good touch. Bianca Belair is impressive. And something that I noticed that, you know, WrestleMania, Nia Jax, who's at least twice the size of Bianca Belair, overhead pressed Alexa Bliss, who is like half the size of Candice LeRae, and there's a huge crowd pop, right? Because that's just something that we're not used to seeing, is, you know, a woman showing that kind of strength. And then Bianca Belair overhead presses, you know, Candice LeRae from this deadlift position, and that's just incredible. You know, that was just such an incredible visual. And then she walked around the ring. It was just effortless. Bianca Belair has such charisma to her, and she has learned to use that charisma in the ring and carry it through to her moveset. I love the fact that I never once see her sweaty or breathing hard. And that's just something that makes it look so effortless to her. I really do think that, you know, there's certain people where we say there's unlimited potential, sky's the limit. Pete Dunne is one of them right now.
Right.
Bianca Belair is right up there. Sky is the limit. She is writing her own ticket at this point. The only thing that will hold her back would be foolish management.
Right.
I'm so high on her.
Largely ready for the main roster now. And I don't know what they're going to do with her right now, because she's racking up wins at a time when a heel is the champion. So normally you don't have another person on the same side of the ledger racking up wins at that time. But she's more or less playing heel. It's not like she's playing a hardcore, mean, badass heel or anything like that. She's not overly cruel, but she's more or less playing heel, I think. And she, I don't know what there is for her right now other than to get these wins to keep her on TV. So it's fortunate that somebody was in a position where taking a loss was actually the right thing for her story. I don't know what you do with Bianca for all that much longer or that you need to. I will say, you know, Bianca engaged to Montez Ford. If they choose to have kids, they're going to have the most charismatic children in the world and the most like show ready kids ever. So
why do you break my heart like this, Kelly?
I'm sorry.
Why do you break my heart?
I'm so sorry. I too want to marry Montez Ford. He's incredible, but
no.
but they are awesome, and just absolutely love those two. And so in 25 years, let's take a look at their kid in WWE. So not a whole lot more to say on that part of the story, I don't think.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Let's talk about Kona Reeves.
Let's have a talk about Kona
Reeves.
Let's talk about Kona Reeves. Now,
do we have to?
It's an intervention.
I like...
On us, NXT, or him?
I like what he's starting to do in the ring. Like, he's mean. He's really mean. I like that. This gimmick is going to be tweaked a lot. Because there are parts of it that, like, the big spot where he throws his arms back and looks up and, like, yells up in the, I don't know, without pyro or whatever like that, it just looks kind of cheap. That's how it looked to me. I think there's something here to work with, and I think he's okay in the ring for what little we've seen. He did work a jobber here, so there's not a lot to say about that. But I like that he works stiff. Everybody knows I like the violent guys, and I like that. So I think there's some of that going for him. Justin made a comment before the show, and I couldn't believe it because I was thinking it, and I was like, I'm going to sound stupid if I bring this up. But he mentioned it, and I was like, okay, validation. But Kona, I was thinking this thing isn't going to work for Kona, this super beautiful idea, if he's got very off-white teeth. Like, we both made the same comment. And maybe that's the gimmick. Maybe he's, you know, thinks that he's super high society and he's really not. But I don't know yet that that's coming through.
I think that's got to be it, because, like that jacket he has looks cheap.
Right.
Like that jacket looks like somebody, like you went to the thrift shop and said, I need to find the Sonny Crockett jacket.
Right. Well, this could work, right? I mean, that could be fine, because that's what Dallas Page was before he turned face. He was trailer trash who won the lottery. So he was this embodiment of what a...
It's aspirational.
Lifetime, yeah, like a...
But isn't that kind of what Sabatelli and Moss are doing?
They got a Maserati.
Like, yeah,
they didn't
share.
But they didn't stick a Maserati logo on a used IROC Z.
Those are rich kids who became, yeah, those are like rich kids who became rich adults. Kona is like this low rent guy acting like a high rent guy. And if that's where they're going, I think that can work. Now, I don't know about this act yet. I don't know about the promos yet. I hope there's something here, because I've been following Kona for a very long time. So I'm just naturally cheering for him to work out. And if he doesn't work out, he doesn't work out. This is his first win on TV, right? Harley, this is the first time he's ever won?
Correct. His record is now 1-6-1.
Okay. So this was it. Finally got a win over the very game Patrick Scott. Yes, I had to look that up.
Yep. This is Patrick's second appearance on NXT.
The one thing I will say about Patrick Scott, like, Kona has him pushed up in the corner and he starts yelling at him, and Patrick Scott starts to cover his mouth. And I was like, wow, that that enhancement talent has got balls of steel to do that to somebody who's at the beginning of a push. And I was afraid we were going to get like a Diesel Virgil moment where Virgil accidentally he punches him in the face and then Diesel just totally shoots on him with elbows to the face. But I don't know. Maybe it was a smaller moment than I'm making it out to be. But it looked like he was trying to cover his mouth.
I didn't catch it.
Yeah, maybe I'll look at it again at some point. But yeah, I thought it enough to write it down, so I will say that. Kona winking at the hard camera before his finish. I mean, that might end up being a nice touch as this character kind of comes along. I'm trying to look at the positive, because this I just don't yet see how this character, as is going to work. I don't know who this character is going to feud with. I don't know what this is going to be, but... 3-4 months ago, we were saying Lacey Evans is completely rudderless and there's nothing for her. And now they have a very clear look for her, a clear act. The music is dreadful, but whatever. It's working.
I paid attention to it this week on purpose.
I can't believe that it doesn't just stick in your head. It's so annoying.
How you doing now?
Okay, so Kona, anything more on Kona, you guys? I'm too passionate about this, so I covered it. But if you've got more on Kona, go ahead.
Justin?
I think the way I put it in my write-up was the problem here isn't the package, it's the contents.
Okay. Wow, that is a really concise way to say what I used many, many words to say.
Well, I agreed with you. I like this intensity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like the intensity. Don't like the look at all on any level. But then I thought about it. It's like, well, he's a heel. I'm not supposed to. So that's success, right?
Yeah, yeah. He looks like somebody that you wouldn't want to hang out with.
I don't like the hair. I don't like the sunglasses.
Yep.
Any of it. I don't think it looks good, but that's beneficial, I guess, because he's a heel. If I don't like him, I'm like, hey, great. That's what they want.
Yeah.
It's so hard to be a
proper heel right now. So hard in this day and age to be a proper heel. So that could work. It's so hard to know when real heat stops and go away heat starts.
And I'm I want to be optimistic.
Yeah.
I want to say, like, how many people in the past have we thought this person's going nowhere? And then look where they are now. I mean, Velveteen Dream was playing a Trump supporter at one point, coming out with, like, airbrushed pictures of Donald Trump on his tights. And, you know, he's doing considerably better these days, even if we haven't seen him in a month.
Right. I like that we get him in small doses because I don't want him to blow that narrative before it can have full impact. So, but it's odd again that we saw most of the roster tonight, it felt, but we didn't see Dream in any capacity. And like usual,
this is a ladder match.
We didn't see Nikki in any capacity. Oh yeah, that's right. We did. Okay, so I think that's the Kona segment for this week, and I think we'll be talking about Kona a lot, I think. That is my prediction. We will be talking Kona quite a bit. Okay, so there were a ton of promos on this show. We covered a little bit of them already. Cassius got a little thing started with Ciampa. I don't think that we really need to belabor the point there. Just a base babyface thing. I'm going to stand up for what's right and all that. EC3 had a poolside promo. I thought this was effective. He still comes off as a little bit memorized to me, but I really like the sentiment and I like the lines that he comes with. I love the fact that he was pimping his comeback by saying the line, as everyone knows, the sequel is always superior to the original. That is a hilarious line. I absolutely love that line. It was my favorite thing of the show, the favorite line of the show anyway. My favorite unintentionally funny line was by Vanessa Bourne when she was saying to Dakota, I'm not scared of you, and I'm not scared of Shayna or Dakota Kai. I was like, you already said the part about Dakota Kai. But, you know, she's coming along, right? I mean, she's getting there. This was a good way to get Bourne a little bit of time. She'll be working with Dakota as Dakota goes towards that redemption story that I think they are doing absolutely beautifully if they're doing what I think they're doing. And if she's going to end up being the one to take this belt off Shayna, which I would make me over the moon happy. So there was that. We had the Kona promo beforehand, a Lars Sullivan promo that was short. I missed that largely because I was grabbing a drink at the time. And the Candice promo, which we already covered. And I suppose we had Lacey Evans. We're not really going to talk about Kairi Sane versus Shazza McKenzie, but we did have Lacey Evans with her run-in on Kairi Sane. So on the many, many promos, Justin, what do you have to say?
I thought they were all pretty good. I didn't catch what's her names that you like so much.
But, Dakota Kai.
No. I did like, no, not her. I saw that one. I love that interaction with Vanessa Bourne.
She's the one I love so much.
No, I mean, the promo itself that you like so much, that wasn't Dakota Kai.
EC3?
Oh.
EC3, thank you.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, I that's why I don't even remember who it was, because I was up, like, refilling my dinner bowl I really like the Dakota Kai thing. I like that she just got, you know, she was happy, she was peppy, and then as soon as they say it said Shayna Baszler, she's got this dark look on her face and got testy and snippy and was like, "Arr." And then Vanessa Bourne came in and she's like, "I'm going to beat you up. I'm not afraid of you." Kind of like what this implied, but I'm still afraid of Shayna Baszler. Dakota Kai is just nailing it right now. Vanessa Bourne, she can be fodder for Dakota Kai, and I'll be perfectly happy. Lacey Evans, well done, whatevs. Lars Sullivan always turns my knobs when I see anything by him. I like this promo a lot.
Well said. Okay. So there you go, Justin, a fan of promos. Harley, what did you think of the promos this week?
I definitely like Dakota. I'm a fan as well. Obviously not as big as some people, but I am a fan. I fear they're really toeing the line between how much of Bailey they're pulling on and giving to Dakota. And it's a fine line to walk. Something about this point, like she's already got the bright color outfit and the plucky underdog thing going on. Something this week, I'd have to go back and watch it. There's something in her inflection or the interaction with her and Vanessa that again reminded me a lot of kind of Bailey standing up to Charlotte and the BFFs and that. And it tiptoed too far onto the one side for me, where I felt like I was being given, in the same way that Justin felt when he saw War Raiders and was like, "Oh, it's this again," as opposed to Dakota being a new original character to me.
I wonder if we're going to see a little more of that as a result of just the number of women we have on the roster. Because it used to be that on the entirety of WWE, we'd have 6 to 8 women. So it was easy to differentiate them from a character standpoint. You didn't have all this bleed through in character because they were doing their own thing. And it was easy to do their own thing that way. Now you've got 30, 35, 40 women on the roster. Like, that's a crazy number in comparison to what they've had. And so you're going to have some that invite comparisons. Now, I will say I've seen a little bit of that Bailey stuff, but I wonder if we're seeing more of that simply because of the law of averages.
Yeah, or maybe Bailey was such a huge success in NXT, arguably one of the most popular women of the popular female wrestler characters the last 5-10 years.
Yep.
So maybe, you know, maybe she becomes like, not a stereotype, what am I trying to say? A template.
Clone?
A template in the same way that you can draw a line from EC3 to Ric Flair to Gorgeous George, that kind of Pretty Rich Boy character, right?
Right. And yeah, and that can work. And maybe this is a way for them to say, "Hey, we can get the whole Bailey thing right. Give us another chance." Because Bailey was not booked overly well on the main roster. There's still time. She's still young, but yeah, booking was not great for her. So she's got a shot.
Yeah.
And I will be her biggest cheering section. So there you go.
EC3 promo. Okay. Sorry, not to cut you off.
Sorry.
You got more to say about Dakota?
Always, but I can't, you know, I'm not even going to make that joke. Go ahead. Go ahead on EC3.
The start of the show, again, I was thinking, wow, it's been like, I feel like we haven't seen EC3 or Ricochet or Velveteen Dream in a while. But and it's like, how is the roster this stacked still when we just lost Andrade and Sanity and the Iconics and Ember Moon and whatever? It still feels like there's a lot of bodies. So I was glad to see the EC3 vignette. I liked the atmosphere of it, the way it was shot and everything. And when he reminded us that he hasn't had a match since the ladder match, which was the debut of EC3 in NXT, and he said the sequel is going to be even better, that triggered something in my brain, and I just went, wow, that's a cool idea, is that EC3 goes to Regal and says he refuses to wrestle enhancement matches. He refuses to, because they're below him. He'll wrestle takeovers, and maybe he'll do a TV match if it's in the main event against a named talent. But anything else, it's not worth his time because he's better than that. He's the top 1%. And it was just an idea I thought of based off of his promo. And I was like, that's a really fun, cool idea. And then 2 minutes later, they announced he's facing Raul Mendoza next week. And I was like, oh, well, never mind. Because he is getting enhancement matches.
Yep. I do. I want to say that that's happened before, that they've had characters who treated enhancement matches like they were beneath them and then only decided to wrestle them when they were threatened with a count-out loss. I know Mr. Perfect for a short time would just beat down. After he lost his Intercontinental title, he just beat down a jobber until he got disqualified. Then he didn't even care and he walked off. And I thought, man, he just lost to a jobber and it still was awesome. Like it helped his character. He got his heat partially back by doing it.
And Baron Corbin had shades of that in NXT in the sense of like, I don't, you know, one move, it's over, and then he walks immediately to the back because it's like, I'm not wasting time with this loser. I have nothing to prove.
Right.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. So, yeah, good stuff there. That probably it for promos. I think we're pretty well covered there, I think. Okay, sounds great. Let's talk a tiny bit about the four guys, the weird assemblage of humanity that was sent to the Greatest Royal Rumble. A weird show. A lot of people didn't watch it for various reasons. Some of them very good. I did end up watching the show out of curiosity. It was treated as a house show. Even the Rumble was fairly, it was kind of paint by numbers, but you know, the worst Rumble is still better than most things. And it was pretty decent. And weird assemblage of guys from NXT that went over there. And Harley and I talked about this. And I did not realize that Babatunde was working on NXT. But as Harley pointed out to me before the show on house shows, he has been playing the bodyguard for, remind me, Leo Rush?
Leo Rush.
Leo Rush, okay.
Yeah, Tom can attest this better maybe next week, but he's actually been walking out to events carrying Leo Rush on his shoulders because the size of him is so ridiculous.
Right. Oh, that's absolutely fantastic.
Like a Master Blaster thing? Master Blaster. Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome reference?
Oh, okay. I'm sitting here trying to think of a wrestler named Master Blaster, and I'm like, I have encyclopedic knowledge of wrestling, but I don't know who that is. Yeah, I'm with you now. Yeah, we also had Dan Matha. Also very, very surprising choice. Tucker Knight, maybe the weirdest choice because one half of a tag team is such a strange thing to do. And we had Roddy, who is not a weird choice. He's one of the four that you would maybe think would go. But yeah, we had a decent amount of time spent in the ring for these guys. I don't know if you've got any of that handy, Harley. Justin, I know you didn't watch this show, so I guess no comment from you unless you want to comment on who did and did not go. But
no,
Harley. Okay, no comment. Harley, any impressions on these guys in the Greatest Royal Rumble?
So, Roddy, perfect sense. And he played the same role Adam Cole played in the January Royal Rumble, right? Like, he was in there for a while. He looked great. He demolished Daniel Bryan's chest. The rest of the match, the commentators were talking about Daniel Bryan's chest looked like hamburger meat Roddy's chops, which, you know, you might... On the one hand, you might go, oh, shit, like, is he going to get in trouble for that? Like, because he, like, seriously beat up Brian Good. But then you remember, you know, I looked it up and it was like, oh, these two know each other from ROH. They had matches there in the past. So they were, like, good. They're probably good friends outside the ring. And it was all cool. Tucker Knight, yeah, when he showed up, I'm thinking, okay, so Otis has to come out in, like, another three or four numbers. And we'll get some fun comedy stuff with the two of them, maybe the two of them in New Day or the two of them in Breezango, because they were in there at the time, and Otis just never showed up. And that was so bizarre. That was the most bizarre of the four to me, which is saying something. Because, yeah, why have one half of a tag team, not the other half? And you will debate me on this, but Otis is so much more entertaining than Tucker Knight. He's weird looking. He's goofy. He comes out. If the fans didn't know him, they'd still look at him like, who is this guy? And be drawn to just how weird looking he is. Whereas Tucker is so bland to me. He reminds me of a shorter Diesel or a heavier Big Cass, but he just – no. Tucker Knight always reminds me of Duke the Dumpster Drossy.
Oh, wow.
Maybe it's the hair. Maybe it's the hair and the facial hair. But every time I see him, I'm just like, oh, I guess Duke quit the trash collection and became a construction worker.
He became a drug runner and got in a ton of trouble is what happened to him. Yeah, so, well, yeah,
at least,
Duke.
At least drug runner still has the alliteration. Duke, the drug runner Drossy.
Well, there you go. Yeah, so I am sitting here looking at the stats. So here's what we got. Dan Matha was in the ring for the shortest amount of time for these guys, 2 minutes and 1 second. He was one of many pieces of cannon fodder for Braun Strowman. He was eliminated. He was, I think, Braun's first elimination when Braun came into the ring, probably, or definitely one of them. Dan entered number 40, was eliminated 32nd. He wasn't the first one who was eliminated. Strowman also eliminated Babatunde, who came in 37th, was eliminated 31st, and lasted 5:53, did not eliminate anybody, but he was actually in the ring longer than any of the other NXT guys. Roderick Strong just got 3:59. That seems like...
Yeah, I thought he was in there much longer.
Yeah, that was it. A very small amount of time for him to be in the ring. And was actually a cannon fodder for Baron Corbin, unfortunately. Corbin got rid of him. Corbin got 3 eliminations. So I guess the always on-again, off-again push of Baron Corbin is on again. And then Tucker Knight, strangely, got 10 minutes and 8 seconds. When he was brought in, he was pushed. He immediately eliminated Drew Gulak, so he did get 1 elimination, just like Roddy. Roddy also got 1 elimination of Rhino. Tucker was in for 10:08, was eliminated by Big E. So, yeah, I guess there you go. New Day versus Heavy Machinery down the road. Really, really strange to have Tucker in this thing and not Otis. Just either half, like, it just doesn't make any sense to have half a tag team over there, but... whatever. They did what they did. They had to fill it in, and somebody had a reason to ask him. So
Babatunde, I will say, he had a face-to-face with Strowman, and he looked bigger. Like he had maybe half an inch to an inch on height-wise. Width-wise, not all that different.
Yeah. He's a big kid.
What was it, good width or was it like bad width? Was it, you know, Strowman width or was it, you know, Yokozuna width?
No, Tunde is pretty built, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking at his numbers. He is 6'10" and 355. So that's okay. He's billed at 6'10". So you never quite know for sure.
So he's 6'3" and 280 pounds. Right. That's what I just heard.
That's entirely possible. You know what? There's some professional football stats here. He was an offensive tackle, played for the Vikings. I didn't know that. And I am
hometown boy.
His reality is 6'9", 350. But apparently they had to give him that 6'10" in wrestling. So, you know, I got to give him that extra inch. 6'9", 350. And his real name is Babatunde. Ayabusi. Huh. You know what? Now that I see that last name, I know who that is. I just totally had forgotten about him. So there you go. Four guys.
Babatunde looked good against Strowman. Like, you know, he got thrown out quickly, but size-wise, he measured up well. So I understood why he was in there. He's the big guy to make Strowman look good.
Yeah.
Dan Matha, don't know why he was in there, because he didn't look that big. He had no offense that I can recall. And just bizarre choice, because he's only been on NXT television maybe once.
Yeah, and he was there. They talked about him being up, going up for 3 weeks, and then he showed up for a match. I don't know if he even had an opponent named, but Samoa Joe beat him down to start
pre-match.
And then we never saw him again.
Yeah, that was it. And I was just like, okay, well, that was a weird way to introduce him. But, you know, 3 weeks, they'll try to give him his heat back. Sure enough, he was never back on.
No, it was great. I always liked the way that was done because it made Samoa Joe so monstrous that this guy who was supposed to be the next big thing just got wiped out of existence by Samoa Joe.
He's been gone for a year and a half or 2 years. Like, I didn't even think about him for ages. Like, his name didn't even come up, and it's just starting to come up again.
I saw him on the house show a couple months ago, and he did a really good job working heel, working the crowd, and, you know, making you want to boo him. He talked about how he was a real man, and, you know, the rest of us weren't, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I think he's going to be Johnny Gargano, which helps.
Oh, yeah. that'll get a guy booed if he's working against Johnny. Okay, so there you go. Four very strange... I mean, I get it with Babatunde because of Braun, but otherwise, yeah, a strange outing for NXT, but maybe something will come of this. Maybe these guys will be up on TV soon. So there you go. That is that for those. We covered most of the show. Otherwise, I want to say I thought it would take a lot longer than that, but we got there. Okay, so I do have a piece of trivia. Harley, you've said you don't take down match time, so I guess you don't have an unfair advantage here. So there are multiple answers to this. There have been 3 takeover matches that were under 1 minute long, and I just need you to name one.
Goddamn. Or,
conversely... I've also got a different way to ask that question. This was going to be originally how I did it. And you know what? Maybe it's a better question. Let me throw this at you.
Are they all singles matches?
Yes, they are. Yeah. One person was in 2 of those 3 matches. Can you name that person?
Corbin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
And
he was on that streak of like instant wins, like one-hit wins.
Yep. Count-along wins. Yep.
Is Corbin versus Dillinger in there?
Yes, Corbin versus Dillinger. 3rd shortest match in TakeOver history at our Evolution. 41 seconds.
Okay. And Justin, who's the other person he squashed?
Who else would they have fed to Baron Corbin? The Whippet and Jobber at a time.
But they would have been big enough to have earned a spot on a TakeOver.
Ty Dillinger wasn't that big at the time.
The only clue I've got would really, really give it away.
Yeah, like Dolph Ziggler's brother or something.
Was it Tyler Breeze?
No, but Tyler's in the other one.
CJ Parker. CJ Parker.
Yep, I was going to say he's doing really well in New Japan right now. But yes, indeed, Baron Corbin versus CJ Parker at Fatal 4-Way, the shortest match in TakeOver history at 29 seconds. Tyler Breeze defeated Xavier Woods at Arrival in 35 seconds in a match that, for $1 million, I could not have told
that match.
I totally forgot about that match.
Did he actually lose that match?
No, I thought I assume.
I'm not sitting here
in the other match.
Oh, no.
Breeze must have lost. There's no way.
No. Right. No, Breeze was pushed pretty hard in NXT. Yep.
Yeah. Breeze, they kept pushing, but he never won a title. Yep. He just basically they would push him to a title shot or a number one contender match, but they always built him well over months, and then he would lose that one match. But he was basically Velveteen Dream.
Yep.
Well, his all-time record: 30 wins, 19 losses, and 1 no contest.
There you go.
So he's at 6'10" overall.
I will also say, and gosh, this almost makes me want to look back at these shows because of how weird this is. The 3 shortest matches were at Fatal 4-Way, Arrival, and R Evolution. The next 3 shortest matches were at the same 3 shows. Bull Dempsey versus Mojo Rawley at Fatal 4-Way was 110. CJ Parker versus Kevin Owens at R Evolution was 314. Yep. And CJ Parker versus Mojo Rawley at Arrival was 325.
Yeah, CJ's gimmick for a while there was just getting embarrassed and humiliated.
When you first asked the question, my mind immediately thought of CJ Parker versus Kevin Owens.
Yep.
Because I remember that was a very short match.
Yep. And our evolution, I want to say that opened the show, because Kevin Owens worked face for the first and only time in his entire career. WWE career.
Yep. And the other
turned at the end of the show. Yep.
The other match I almost guessed at was Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn for the championship, because that was an extremely short match.
It was short-ish, but you have to go pretty far down the list to get to that. That is
that was probably the shortest championship match.
It's for the men's championship. I think that's probably right.
I think of any championship match, now, it was short.
I'm looking at some short ones. Owens versus Zayn at Unstoppable was 13 minutes exactly.
Okay, so it's 13 minutes of Zayn getting beat up.
Yeah, indeed.
That was a hard one to watch.
Moon versus Baszler at Philadelphia was 10:06. The four-way Asuka, Billy Kay, Nikki Cross, Peyton Royce at San Antonio was 9:55.
That was a short match, especially for a multi-person match.
9:52 for the other multi-person one. Moon, Zayn, Cross, Royce.
How are the Ascension not all over this list?
Asuka versus Jax was 9:12. I don't remember if that was championship. You know what? Their
Ascension never defended the titles. That's how.
Yeah. You know what? We're gonna get to that. Yes, Ascension versus Too Cool at Arrival was 6:40, and Ascension versus El Locale and Kalisto at the first one that was just called Takeover was
Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yes, El Locale. Yeah, because the Ascension had like this year where they were winning squash matches on every episode, but were defending the titles maybe once every three.
They were literally the only tag team in the division. That's why they had to bring Too Cool in. There was nobody else.
Yeah.
But indeed, the shortest championship match is Ascension versus El Locale and Kalisto. So there you go. 6 minutes, 18 seconds. Shortest. You know what? We burned through a lot of possible trivia questions, but what are you going to do, right? I don't know, guys. I think that's our show, unless we got anything else to cover. We did have the one email. I'm going to check real quick to make sure we didn't get any more. We did not.
News from today, Keith Lee has signed with NXT.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I should have written that down, but I was at work when I first saw that. Keith Lee has signed, so we'll be talking about him.
Has he been lately? Evolve?
Yes, he has been in the Evolve WWN emails that I get. His name has definitely been all over those. So
yes.
I assume he's been working in a myriad of places, but we'll see him before long, and that should be interesting.
He and Shane Taylor had a year long feud with War Raiders in ROH a year or two ago.
Yeah, maybe we should have there,
because he had, if I recall, I think he was trained by either by Ray Rowe.
And this was when Shane Taylor was even bigger. Yes, so
they were both like 4 pound guys at that point.
Taylor in his current state doesn't seem like somebody who would be hired by WWE, but for a big guy, he can work. So, you know, he's somebody that, I don't know, maybe that's a thought down the road, but who knows? Let's not get ahead of myself. We don't need more guys on the roster right now. Like you guys said, it is stuffed. The shelves are absolutely stuffed. So I'm going to let you guys say who you are again and where you can be found on the World Wide Web. Harley, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Talking Honor, and my ROH podcast Tuesdays through PW Torch. It's called Talking Honor.
Justin.
And I am on Twitter at Justin_M_James. Don't let those underscores hold you back from tweeting at me.
All right. And I am on Twitter at Spooky Milk. That's where you can find me pretty much everywhere. A couple of you follow me every week and talk a little bit of wrestling behind the scenes. Don't tweet a lot, but I respond to everything. I will say in closing, this last week, I lost my wonderful friend from high school, Aaron Neusmeyer, to cancer. He was a great guy. He loved wrestling also. He was definitely a main roster fan. NXT wasn't necessarily on his radar. But Aaron, I absolutely loved you, man, and I miss the hell out of you. And rest well, man.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Live!